Welcome back to another edition of Editing Aloud. My name is Samay Zake. Joining me in studio today are Siko Nathi, TJ and Lucanio. Gentlemen, I want to start off with one of the, I think, the stories that have been covered in the FM, and that's the state of our municipalities. The Auditor General coming out with a report saying only 17 of these municipalities are in good order. One of them, only in Gauteng, we just have one which got a clean audit. 25 billion, I think it was, in irregular expenditure. Your sentiments on that story, Siko Nathi?
So it's 17 municipalities obtaining a clean audit outcome out of 257. If anyone is wondering what's wrong with this country, look there. Municipalities are the very first point of contact for communities, for individuals on the ground. Nobody can tell me what provinces do. To a certain extent, people can tell you what national government do, but it is at the municipal level where services have to be provided to the communities, and they've been broken down totally. So that's exactly what's wrong, and the situation keeps getting worse and worse. Nobody seems to be taking any responsibility, and of course, the mayors get re-elected and re-elected and re-elected all over again.
I mean, I agree with every word you said there, and I think we're all guilty of this to some extent. I mean, find me any political journalist in the country who wants to write about local government. They all want to write about the big stories, right, about Cyril Ramaphosa and Esma Khashule. But really, the things that we really should be concerned about, as Siko Nathi says, are at the local level. I mean, I think one of our main corporate stories this week was about Astral not being able to actually do this work, having to invest in his own water infrastructure in a town in Standerton. And obviously people know about, you know, my old university town, Grahamstown, now called Makanda. Now they get that big festival that I think is on at the moment. When there was talk earlier, it might not even happen because people not even sure there was going to be water. Or that even, that's quite a big part of that other town's economic life per year. Like, I don't know how much of the town's revenue comes from those few weeks. And there's talk of people here would normally go saying, I'm not sure if I should go. Is there going to be water? So this is a big issue, big problem. But instead, we like to talk about the big issues, like Mr. What's his name from Astral was saying. We like to talk about bullet trains and all these things. But we need to get those services to work. And otherwise, nothing works.
And it wasn't surprising that there's so few of these municipalities that got clean audits. And I think it speaks to a sort of a skills drain that we have out of municipalities, because the same as a journalist doesn't want to cover a local municipality, your financial managers and those guys, they're not going to want to go and work for a mid-tier municipality somewhere rural. So I think it becomes very tough for municipalities to get the right people there and to slot them into a system that then works so that all of the other services can be provided. And that, to me, is the problem. We've got this sort of civil service that's been emaciated. And we've seen it at all levels of government, but I think municipalities, it's the most acute.
I think one of the title on the front page of the FM says how municipalities are destroying SA business, and I think that's something we often overlook, because we tend to see municipalities as this thing that just provides services, but as you're pointing out, we have the case in point of Astral, who has to invest in their own infrastructure just to get business going.
Look, that particular story, the company Astral, one, it's the biggest employer in the Liqua municipality, which is Standerton. And it had to go to court to force the municipality to actually provide it with a certain amount of water so that it can raise the chickens and feed South Africa. And you have that story playing all over the country in the Western Cape. Pioneer Foods had to go to court to force the municipality to pay Eskom. The company is paying its bills, so does Astral in Mpumalanga, paying their bills, but the money is not reaching Eskom, and who gets cut off? The paying customer. So that's how damaged the whole situation is. And of course, those financial managers and those municipal managers there are the same people who, when they got a few years ago, an unqualified audit outcome, printed a T-shirt and celebrated that we got a qualified audit outcome. Remember that? Someone went and thought that was actually a good thing. That tells you what level of skill there is in the municipalities. And we all, of course, run to the big cities and the big stories. But why would you want to stay in Grahamstown, for example?
Mm-hmm. And then the problem is, for me, the problem is how they raise the revenue. I mean, municipalities, they make the, you can look at one of these graphs in this article, they make get most of the revenue from electricity sales. Well, not the majority, but it's the largest single contributor apart from grants from central government. So they have to put a markup on the electricity they sell. And that to me doesn't make sense. Why does a municipality then have to put a markup on it? It to me, that doesn't make sense. Why not just buy it directly from the electricity supplier? Mm. And I mean, we can talk long about issues the electricity supplier itself has, but the last thing you need is a middleman in between that then doesn't even pay the electricity supplier in the end.
Come on, but these esteemed comrades do also want to drive in black convoys in the German sedans. If you take away the revenue coming from electricity, they actually add up to 40% onto the electricity price for doing absolutely nothing. They mark up the Eskom power, which in itself is already 524% higher than 10 years ago. And they take the money and go do whatever they want with it, and they don't do what's supposed to be done with the money. It was supposed to help the municipalities raise revenue for services. Now they are not paying for the electricity, they are not buying the services that were supposed, the infrastructure. Why do we need them?
We've solved the problem, I think. Easy.
I mean, Sokonati mentioned the paying of bills in order to drive these sedans and in these convoys. These state-owned companies are struggling. I think we had Danel and also the SABC struggling to pay salaries. I think Danel was saying they're going to pay at one stage just 85% of those salaries. It seems someone came to the rescue at the last minute.
Yeah, it's also like quite typical of what's happened with the state institutions. Right? Like, I mean, like, you know, suppose you can call back to Eskom with the last day with the job cuts. You know, like, you hear in the morning, the analysts are going to pay salaries. Then in the evening, you hear the minister says, oh, no, they are going to pay salaries. You know, you sort of wonder, like, who's actually in control of these things? You know, who's, like, where is the proper division of labor, you know, so to speak.
So this was yesterday.
Mm. Yeah.
At the very last minute, Daniel says we can only pay 85% of the salaries. The minister responsible is Pravin Gordhan for Daniel. He then arranges a loan with Emashonisa. We still we don't know who that is, because he now makes the announcement in Parliament at the State of the Nation in response to Cyril Ramaphosa's State of the Nation. One, you should worry very much. Of course, Danel and Eskom and SABC have always been borrowing money to pay salaries. Mm. But are we at a point now where we think that's normal and acceptable? And just imagine breaching your credit facility with a bank that incurs a huge amount of money. For Pravin Gordhan to walk into Parliament and casually announce and then we are supposed to celebrate that, some lender has just come in to give us an advance to pay salaries. Why have we run the companies down like that? And what are we doing to prevent that happening next month?
For me, it's the same. It's a similar thing to what you have the municipalities in the middle. I mean, if government is just going to pay the salaries in the end, then why have the middleman of a management and let's pretend that it's a private sector? That it looks like the private sector. In the private sector, a shareholder, when the company is in trouble, a shareholder, which in this sense is what Pravin Gordhan actually is, he's the shareholder, or the South African government's shareholder. The shareholder wouldn't come to the fore and say, listen, let's pay the salaries, we've made a plan. That's management's job. Management will find a way to then borrow money, and then shareholders will be pushing them to make sure that there's no other risks, but the shareholder in the end probably doesn't really care that much about the worker. The shareholder cares about the business and the sustainability of the business. And I think that's the problem. Government is trying to be the shareholder and to be the grandfather. And you can't be both. You're the shareholder or you're the grandfather.
I suppose the question here is, like, what do we do about it? Because I'm sure we've discussed it so many times on the show. You know, in relation to Eskom, in relation to the SABC. Remember, like, SABC, like, the board comes in, says it's too bloated, we need to cut. What happens? The minister says, like, I'm not talking to those guys. And then next thing you know, there's nothing has happened. 6 months later, we have an election.
So what do? We shrug and walk away.
You know?
move on, you know, to the next topic.
Now we've had an election, now the SAPC can't pay salaries. I mean, we could have, you and I could have foreseen this 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm. No, we did.
And we did, yes.
We shouted, and of course we were told we are Stratcom and we are agents of white monopoly capital and everything. Mm. Now it has come full circle. Mm-hmm. The chickens have really come home to roost. All these companies cannot pay salaries. Eskom has been borrowing money to pay salaries, has been borrowing money to, in fact, all of them have been borrowing money to go pay for operations, and nothing has changed. Bailout after bailout. Now they are talking about creating a sovereign wealth fund, and we're dreaming about trains. Mm. How can you not make fixed metro rail, and you're still dreaming about a speed train? You can't fix metro rail.
I mean, I don't want to sound too negative, but I think, like Leon Londiwa's story today about prescribed assets, that another unforeseen consequence, like she had like a presentation with one of the biggest companies in that space of pensions, and then basically were telling her, like, if you do this and you force, like, people's pensions to be thrown in that black hole that is like Eskom, people are just gonna stop saving. So like so there's one thing of losing that money. Now we actually have like a danger here that we're actually like, you know, millions of South Africans could be discouraged from savings. When you already have this low savings rate as it is.
We have been here before. That those prescribed assets, the National Party gave up in 1989. Of course you could say they realized now the communists are taking over, coming from the Patrice Lumumba School of Economics in Russia, coming to take over, and they didn't want the pensions of the civil servants and private investors to be in the hands of the communists. But now we are doing exactly the same thing. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now. That was 30 years ago, by the way.
And prescribed assets, remember, it's almost it's the very, very, very last resort. This is what the government at that time did. They were an illegitimate government, but what they did is they said, the rest of the world is not going to give us anything. We have to now look after ourselves in a way. Mm. So let's use pensioners' money. Put this here, put this there to prop up the regime. I mean, is South Africa really there? I mean, with proper management and with a better business plan, Eskom can go to the world markets and get the money. So there's no reason why we should go to prescribed assets. It's like using a rock to fix your car.
You can't really go to prescribed markets when you know you are sinking the economy and you have no other way. You don't want anyone with a half a brain cell to tell you that this is not going to work.
But we shouldn't be there, obviously. I mean, Eskom itself, it should be able to go to capital markets, raise the money.
So Cesar Zimela is the former CEO of SAA, and I think she's currently before the Zondo Commission on State Capture. What have you picked up on developments there thus far?
She's put it fairly, she's dragged Malusi Gigaba, the former public enterprises minister, squarely into the commission and says, during Gigaba's time, and that's when Cesar left actually, she got hired during Gigaba's time and left 2 years later as CEO of SAA. She says corporate governance totally collapsed and we had no clue. As management, we fought back and tried to stop SAA pulling out of the Johannesburg-Mumbai route. And there were very flimsy reasons given, but in a nutshell, corporate governance collapsed under Malusi Gigaba. And of course, we know that he was then promoted to finance minister, and his first speech was, orthodoxy out the window, I will manage the finances of this country as I see fit.
Yeah, have you guys had a chance to look at it?
No, not really, but I remember that time very well. I mean, it was already in trouble. It was already asking for, I mean, billions just to stay alive. And, I mean, the solutions, and this is what the board at the time said, they say SAA had been undercapitalized for more than a decade. So at the time, I mean, there wasn't a permanent solution, and I still think we're
overlooted.
Well, that's the thing. It might be the one side of the coin or the other. You don't know, but that's the problem. So maybe then, this is what, 7 years ago, 6 years ago. Maybe if then we bit the bullet that we're probably going to have to bite now if we want to fix it instead of sell it. Maybe if we bit it then, we would have been fine now.
So corporate governance is obviously a key issue in not only in the private, I mean, in the public sector, but also clearly in the private sector. We have also another story in the FM. That man there, as Sikonati likes to point out, being pursued for everything I think that he earned since 2008, I think it was?
2009?
Steinhoff has, through the High Court in the Cape, sued Marcus Yoste for 870 million rands, these being salaries and bonuses share and share options. Oh, the share options are over and above that. This is the cash portion that he got. And then they said the value of the share options.
At that time.
Yeah, at that time.
Not now, at that time.
When the Steinhoff share price was 74 rand.
Yeah, exactly, 90. 90
it's now 125 cents. They want every cent that Marcus Yoste was paid as a salary, because he had been hired to deliver honestly and successfully to drive that company. Of course, they are lawyer, and together with the finance director Ben Lagrange, who has confirmed receiving the suit from the High Court. So this is a new territory in corporate governance and accountability. Mm. Pay back every cent.
It's scary. I mean, if I was an executive just retiring and relaxing, a few years later, now the company comes knocking. I mean, this was very specific circumstances.
Yeah.
But as you say, it sets a precedent. I mean, so you can't just ride off into the sunset. You know the company's going to come for you.
And this probably won't even be the last case, you know. I mean, without suggesting like there's any conclusion on what happened, for example, if you look at a company like Tongaat, I mean, it's quite clear now from the company's own statements that a lot of the earnings in the previous years were based on information that was possibly incorrect, and then the process of verifying that. So once it's,
he's going to say they are facts. They are facts.
They said.
Past practices.
Deliberate management practices, which is code for fraud. Steinhoff said accounting irregularities. It is fraud. They are pursuing Marcus Yoste for fraud to pay back the money. Tongaat said past practices, and that is fraud. They will pursue them for fraud. Now, let's take a step back. Distribution Warehouse has already done this and gotten the money back. The directors there didn't even try to fight back. They paid back the bonuses they had.
This is my point exactly. So like, once this is established, then you'd assume...
But I want you to say it is fraud.
It's alleged fraud.
Once it's been established that there was fraud, and that then directors were earning salaries and getting like bonuses and getting like share option schemes based on those numbers that are then proved to have been cooked later on, then obviously this one, so this will not be the last thing, or this should not be the last thing we see, we hope.
No, and what's interesting, if you read the two annual reports that Steinhoff brought out in the last couple of months, the ones we've been waiting for so long for, they say over and over again in that report that very few of the managers that were involved gave them the cooperation in helping to sort out the mess afterwards. So now you wonder, I mean, had Yoste or Lagrange, had they worked with Steinhoff to help them unravel this thing, maybe they would have gone lighter on them. You don't know, but maybe they would have. Maybe they would have said, "No, your 870 million, we see that as a consulting fee for helping us sort out this mess. We won't pursue you for that."
DJ, now the thing here is, this is just the civil part of it. That report clearly points to criminal activity, and where are the police? Steinhoff has laid charges of fraud against him and nine other people. Where are the police? Not only South African police, in Germany they've been investigating for 5 years. Where are the charges? The man needs to be led away from his house in a Marnas in chains. So you can answer to the charges of fraud. Where are the police? This is as far as Steinhoff can go. Pay back the money. We will sequestrate you and everything. But where are the police?
no appetite to do that, I guess.
Well, if Sinov gets all of it, they have 1 billion and some change out of these two guys.
That's if
they sit on 10.5 billion euros of debt. So, I mean, this is more of a symbolic thing than anything else. But I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, because it might not materialize. I just move on very quickly to another story. Bain and Company, the global top three consultancy embroiled in the crippling of the South African Revenue Services, appointed former Kumba Iron Ore CEO Norman Mbazima. Lukas, just give us a bit of background to that story. What's going on there?
I mean, if anybody who is aware what happened with the Nugent Commission, that was set up by Cyril Maposa after to look into what happened at SARS during the Tom Moyane era. Mm-hmm. I mean, over the course of the commission, we actually got details about how heavily involved Bain was in that exercise of destruction, mainly via his previous country head, whose name Vittorio Massoni, who's seemingly have disappeared off to Italy or somewhere. I think Sissi Konati and I met him a few times actually.
In Italy?
No, unfortunately not. And I think in Melrose Arch. And then, so now, they were found guilty in the commission. And then they paid back the money. You know, it's similar with McKinsey. But I think what we're seeing here is probably a plan to come back into the public domain, almost rehabilitate the reputation. Mm-hmm. Say we've got new leadership. And we've seen that with KPMG, with Wiseman Kutlu. So it's supposed to be a similar kind of process, attempt at rehabilitation. And I'm sure Sigonati will agree with me here on this case. But people are going to still ask questions. Massoni was allowed, for example, to just resign and just disappear. And there are questions whether or not they should account for that or his action, or who worked with him when he was still at Bain. Are they still at Bain? No, and what about appearing to the Zondo Commission, for example, into state capture? I'm sure this won't be the end of it, but it's a beginning of a process for them where they're trying to sort of set, basically using the sort of I would say the KPMG Wiseman Kutlu sort of template to sort of rehabilitate themselves.
And there's a broader thing. I mean, whenever things get dysfunctional, the consultants start coming out of their holes to feed on what is dysfunctional. And this is the case in Eskom, this was the case with SARS, it's the case with so many of our state-owned entities and, to an extent, actually our government. So, I mean, if you can take consultants out of this thing and everything just functions, great. There'd be no need for the Bains and the McKinseys of the world to come into your parastatals. Then they can consult the private sector and help those guys make more money, and that's what you obviously want. But there's always a different sort of a different dynamic to when this absolute capitalist consultancy firm goes in and consults a state-owned entity on how to better do its business. I mean, how does that work?
And in the end, taxpayers get screwed.
Exactly. We pay for that.
But here's the trend, though, in the KPMG matter in particular. Mazzoni comes from Italy, representing this global company. They totally loot South African Revenue Services, and the European goes into the sunset. No arrest, nothing. A black prominent executive like Mbazima, Norman Mbazima, and you have Nkutlu on the other side. If they were so good, why did these companies not notice them before? Now this black man is good enough to clean up the mess, because they must now deal with the black government. They must deal with the black government in the dark continent. McKinsey, it's going to do exactly the same. It went and fetched a guy from Senegal who looked like us in order to deal with us after all the others have messed up. That is the trend. The next set of thieves that come in, they will also get another black guy to clean up when they've been caught.
That's deep. very quickly, we've got about 2 minutes left. TJ, the TymeBank CEO, leaving for personal circumstances,
as they say.
Is it a worry, as some people are making it out to be, that he's leaving so soon after the launch of TymeBank?
The thing is, if you want to invest in TymeBank, you invest through African Rainbow Capital. That's the way to do it. The only other people that have stock in there is management and I think some employee trust. So you'd have to ask whether it's a worry for African Rainbow Capital. They said it's not a worry. It looks like it's for personal reasons. What those personal reasons are, we don't know. What's interesting is people say that he's been there for a very short time. He has been there for 3 years. So, I mean, we've seen the bank only for the last 6 months or so since it's publicly launched. But there's been a long building phase. So, I mean, to me, it doesn't look like that big a concern. The two founders are still involved. So I think the background to the thing, more importantly, is African Rainbow Capital got this thing for a song. Commonwealth Bank of Australia, they were in first with Tymac, and they wanted to take it to different places.
Yeah.
They chose South Africa as one of those places. And then someone at head office said, we're out of emerging markets. So they had to sell it down quickly. Mm-hmm. And they sold the stake to African Rainbow Capital. The question is now, who do you get as a CEO?
Yeah.
Not lots of financial sector CEOs around. I mean, how many acting positions are there at the moment? There's someone in Moyo's position. There's someone in Ramos' position. So the question is, who do they appoint as a permanent CEO?
I just want to get one very quick comment from Sekunati. You're not buying the personal circumstances excuse.
Yeah, all of a sudden he now wants to spend time with his children. Maybe it doesn't matter to us directly. We're not customers of the bank, 500,000 people, we're not direct shareholders in the bank. But can African Rainbow Capital tell us exactly what happened?
Okay, well, that's what we're going to leave it for now.
Time will tell.
Only time will tell, indeed. That's where we leave things for this week's edition of Editing Aloud. Do join us again next week.